So the Dhamma for today is the Sevenfold Noble Wealth. Wealth according to the Buddha. Wealth in a material sense is not considered to be incredibly valuable in the Buddha's teaching. It's not really referred to as wealth. Dana, it's referred to as bhoga, that which you can consume. So not given much value, not considered to be all that great. And so the teaching on wealth, true wealth, or noble wealth, is meant to address those people, address that part of us that is obsessed with and intoxicated by worldly wealth and gain, material pleasure, material wealth, materialism. Material wealth is a huge part of our life, our society, our worldview is often consumed by material wealth, and many people would argue that material wealth is valuable, beneficial, worth striving for different reasons. Two main reasons. One is they would say that material wealth protects you. Material wealth protects you from suffering. So if someone is without material wealth, they are susceptible to a great number of different kinds of suffering. Hunger, disease, dangers of all sorts of dangers that come from not having the protection of wealth and possessions, a house and home and family and friends and the various things that come from material wealth. They would say it's a protection from suffering. The second reason why people would strive after material wealth, of course, is the pursuit of happiness. They would argue that material wealth is valuable for the purposes of obtaining sensual pleasure, which is, of course, pleasant. And a source of what they would say is true happiness. A person without material wealth will always be hungering and craving for things that they can't have, wishing and dreaming for things and never able to gain them. Some people who come to wish to riches later in life will be so happy and pleased beyond their wildest dreams that all the things that they wish they could have had when they were poor, they suddenly can have. The obsession that carried over from our days of poverty is suddenly able to be fulfilled, and it's a great happiness for them. There's great pleasure, great comfort, great satisfaction that comes from it. So they would say, well, this is a great reason to be rich. If I was rich, I would be able to do all the things I want to do, have all the things I want to have, and so on. And the Buddha didn't deny, I think, either of these things. Both of them are valid and to be acknowledged as reasons why people seek out sensual pleasure, why people seek out riches and material wealth. But both of them have disadvantages and don't really hold up to scrutiny. The easy one is the idea that material wealth leads to happiness, true happiness, which of course is not correct. The misunderstanding comes from the relationship between suffering and wanting, suffering and desire. Now, the Buddha said that craving, desire, thirst is the cause of suffering. And this is because when you don't get what you want, you suffer, right? At all times, no matter how much you have, as long as you want more, you will always suffer. And the nature of craving is that getting what you want does not fulfill your craving. You know, craving is something that is habitual, like all of our mental states. As our mind develops habits, whatever direction our mind inclines, that becomes our habit. And so if we are craving after something, when we get what we're craving, that feeds and encourages more craving. Just like when we're angry, and we're able to hurt those that we want to be, that we're angry at, It only leads to more anger. It doesn't make us satisfied. It doesn't make us happy. The same goes with all mental states. The more you succeed with certain mental states, the more it encourages them. And so the more greed we cultivate, the more we acquire what we want, the more wanting we will have. And so it's not even a matter of always wanting, it's a matter of more wanting. This is why drug addiction is such a wretched state, but it also goes for any sort of sensual pleasure, and it's why rich people are often the least happy. They're the most wretched. They're the most clingy and addicted and obsessed sort of people you can find, and they're never content and never satisfied because they indulge in getting they're never told they can't have what they want, and that state can corrupt and destroy a person as the fulfillment and the satisfaction becomes less and less as the desire becomes more and more, and you're constantly being triggered not having what you want. So this is something that you can fairly obviously is not the way to true happiness, and this idea of material wealth is not really valid. The second one is, or the other one is a little bit harder to see. We all have to acknowledge that even as monks, everyone in the world needs things to survive. We need food, we need clothes, we need shelter, we need medicines. These are things that we need. We need a great many things, we would say, or people would say, to be protected against suffering. But there's a misunderstanding here, and there's a flaw here in this sort of reasoning as well. And this is in the dependence on these sorts of protections. Yes, certainly monks require robes and food and shelter and medicines to be free from affliction. But the key here is that practice in the Buddha's teaching is to free you from the need or free you from the need to be free from those sorts of affliction. Meaning we take on the most barest of necessities of robes, of food, of shelter, just because we acknowledge that without them our practice and our work is going to become more difficult. But we do not cling to them. We work towards freeing ourselves from the need for them, the emotional need for them. So an ordinary person who protects themselves with wealth by buying a big house and by stocking up on food and by stocking up on money so that they will never have to be without this or without that, always having the things they need, saying that I'm protected with all my wealth, is for every single one of those things that they acquire and they depend upon, becomes a crutch for them. Every single one of them becomes a source for potential suffering when it breaks, when it disappears, when it is stolen, when it fails, when it's lost. Anytime, even when it's not lost or damaged or taken, even when it's threatened, anytime our stability that we've come to depend upon is threatened, we suffer, we worry, we stress. Even when they are not threatened, we worry that they might disappear, we worry that things might change. So our lives of ordinary people are fraught with this worry and this stress, this constant aggravation of wondering or worrying about when things might change and when we might lose because of our dependency on these things. Not when, what if I don't have money? What if I don't have food? What if I don't have family? What if my friends and relatives and the comforts, what if they disappear? The practice of the Buddha's teaching is to cultivate freedom from this, anisito javiharati, dwelling independent, not dependent on anything, not dependent on food. So a monk depends on food, but if they don't get it, the training is to be free from the stress and the worry and the grieving that comes from not getting what you want, so that you have the hunger in the body, but you dwell with it patiently and most likely survive. And you through the practice of the Buddha's teaching, you come to be able to separate, for example, physical needs and mental needs. And though you may have physical needs, you give up the mental needs. So the practice of the Buddha's teaching is directly opposed to these sorts of accumulation of wealth, either for pleasure and happiness or even for the protection from suffering. The protection from true suffering has to be the protection from mental suffering that can't come from the attainment of material wealth or the accumulation of material wealth. So we need different kinds of wealth, and this is why the Buddha taught this sort of thing, is to help people change their mind and shift their focus away from materialism, away from material possessions, towards true wealth and true treasure, true riches that come from the practice of the Dhamma. So these are the seven things. Now to actually get into them. The first is saddha, confidence or faith. Now, a person who has great wealth can have great faith in their wealth, but it's misplaced. Ordinary people can have much faith. Now, often they don't and have much doubt. People in the world are often plagued by doubt, but even if they're not, any kind of confidence that is misplaced, as I said, in things like wealth that can never hope to satisfy or live up to our expectations, when our faith is ill-founded, it's even more dangerous. Faith is only a true treasure, or confidence is only a true wealth, a true sort of riches, when it's based on something like the Buddha's teaching of practice and experience and self-realization. When you come to see for yourself the nature of the world and the way things are, you have this perfect confidence that's based on knowledge, based on understanding. This is a true wealth that it can only be gained through direct experience of things as they are, through the practice of following the Buddha's teaching, following the path to freedom from suffering, and seeing the truth that nothing is worth clinging to, that the things that we cling to are impermanent, they're unsatisfying, and they're uncontrollable. Even if they make us happy for a while, we can't keep them, and we can't depend upon them. Confidence comes from seeing all of this and from being free from the need for material wealth. As I said, a person who has given these things up has a great treasure and a great wealth in that they don't need those things. They have confidence because they know it can't get any worse than this. You know, I can't lose anything if I don't have anything to lose. A person who has given up wanting, given up chasing after things, will never have the suffering that comes from not getting what you want. The problem with not getting what you want is solved by never wanting, or by freeing yourself from the stress and the suffering that comes from wanting. And you have this great self-reassurance that you have the knowledge that everything is going to be okay, because being okay doesn't depend upon externalities, doesn't depend on things that are not dependable. So the second noble wealth is sila, ethics. Now, absolutely, it's possible to have ethics without the practice of the Buddha's teaching. Some people have it, but for the most part, ethics is very much endangered by our pursuit for material wealth. A great lesson for those who are chasing after material wealth is a reminder of the relative value of ethics as compared to material wealth. That compared to all the wealth and all the riches in the world, material wealth makes them pale in comparison. They pale in comparison with ethics, with this noble wealth of ethics, morality, moral fiber or upright character. When a person gives up stealing and lying and cheating and killing and harming others, manipulating others, this is a great wealth that is lost for those who cling to material wealth and seek out riches and worldly pleasures and so on. What you can see with those who are obsessed with material wealth is often that they take it to be the ultimate power, and that it can get them whatever they want. They lose sight of ethics because they don't see the need for it. A person who is enamored with material wealth will get the false assurance that somehow they can do away with any kind of right or wrong. Right or wrong is something they can make up. Right is what I want, wrong is what I don't want. And this is true because I have the money to enforce it. I have the wealth to enforce it. I have the power or the fame or whatever to enforce my opinions. When I want something, it's right and I get it and no one can say otherwise. And we see this because the people around us are too afraid of us or too beholden to us to argue. And so it comes to be this false assurance, this fake sort of confidence that is so fragile and unreliable. But none of this takes away from the fact that our lack of moral fiber, our lack of ethics, has a great impact, as it has a profound impact on our minds. No matter how much wealth we have, if we are unethical, we are going to suffer from the animosity of others that we harm, from the paranoia that they might try to get back at us, from the self-recrimination, guilt that we have based on our evil deeds, even just the pollution and the corruption of the mind because of all the greed and anger and delusion associated with the acts that are so terrible and unethical and harmful, as much to us or even more to us than they are to our victims. A person who is unethical, no matter how much money they have, is a true wretch, someone we should feel sorry for. We should never be angry or upset at them or feel like they are abusing their power. We should feel like they are wasting the great opportunity that they have and the great result of all the goodness that they have to be so wealthy and to be, even just to be born a human being. They've given all that up with their unethical behavior. They are someone who is truly wretched and truly impoverished, no matter how much money they have. The money is of no consequence or benefit to them or to anyone else. So something that we hold, we guard very, very carefully as a treasure is our ethics, our morality, something that no matter how poor we might be materially, we can still be rich if we are, we can still be far richer than anyone with material wealth. If we are well established in ethics and virtue and good character. The third and the fourth treasure, wealth, types of wealth are hiri and otapa, which we've talked about before, and these are sort of the basis of ethics. Hiri means the recoiling from the deeds, from evil deeds, and otapa means the recoiling from their results. And they're a pair, so they kind of are two sides of the same coin. They relate to the same sorts of attitudes that we have, why we are disinclined to perform evil deeds, to kill, to steal, to cheat, to lie, even to take drugs or alcohol or engage in all sorts of intoxicating behaviors, is because we, through practice, see that they are harmful, see that they have direct and unpleasant and unbeneficial consequences. They harm us, they harm others, and they pollute our minds and they keep us from being free from suffering. Hiri and otapa go beyond ethics. As I said, a normal person in the world can have ethics, but only a person who sees clearly can have true hiri and otapa. Sometimes people are naturally born with these sorts of things. Sometimes people have them and they lose them. Sometimes people don't have them and through their experiences they gain them. The Buddha said these are the two things that guard the world. And we see that when the world doesn't have these things, when people are not afraid of the consequences of their deeds, when they're not ashamed of the bad deeds that they might do, when they do not have this recoiling from these things, that they are easily able to slip into performing all sorts of unwholesome deeds, and the world goes up in flames as we engage in such deeds that cause suffering to us and suffering to others. So hiri and otapa, something that we treasure and we're so happy to have attained through our practice of mindfulness. As we practice, we come to see and become ashamed of the things that we've done. We don't have to dwell or get upset about them, but we come to change our view on unwholesomeness and on unwholesomeness, becoming inclined more towards deeds that truly lead to our happiness and lead to the happiness of others. And seeing that those are the things that are of true value and true benefit. Not the cheating or manipulating or harming others for our short-term material wealth. A person who is obsessed with material wealth, again, has no need for hiri and otapa, no need to worry about their deeds. They can just use money to make it go away, they think, which of course is absurd. They can't change the effect that the deeds they do have on their mind. So these are noble treasures as well. The fifth noble treasure, bahusaccha, means much learning. Much learning is considered a treasure or a wealth in the Buddhist teaching, true wealth, beyond any material wealth. Now, absolutely there are kinds of learning that are not to our benefit and not considered true wealth. Any kind of learning in a worldly sense is really on an ultimate level not terribly beneficial. Now, you could argue that there is relative benefit. A person who is well learned, if they have a PhD or if they're well knowledgeable in a study in a certain sphere, that can be of absolute benefit to them in the world. A person who is even a master in business can gain great material wealth. But none of this is truly great wealth. Bahusaccha really is limited to those things that have great spiritual benefit. Those knowledge, those things that we have learned from others, that are able to help us and guide us in our practice, in our on the course to become free from suffering. So spiritual learning, spiritual teachings, obviously most importantly the teachings of the Buddha. The Buddha's teaching is so full of so many treasures that even if we don't understand them all ourselves, just learning them and having them at our disposal is such a great wealth that our whole life we can carry with us. Sometimes something that we learn or read about, we don't understand completely or isn't applicable to our lives, but then a problem comes up or a challenge comes up and we're able to apply it based on our learning. Learning the Buddha's teaching is something that is a great wealth and something that we shouldn't take for granted. It is true that a person can practice the Buddha's teaching and have little knowledge of the teaching, but they could be considered to be relatively poor compared to those who have great knowledge. Now, it also has to be said that even with the Buddha's teaching, a person can have great knowledge of it and not considered to be truly great or have any great benefit from it. If they are not practicing the Buddha's teaching, you can't really consider it to be a wealth either. Bahusaccha is really a true wealth, a true treasure, a true riches for those who are practicing the Buddha's teaching as well, because they can understand and apply the teachings appropriately. A person who hasn't practiced, doesn't practice, will misunderstand and will misapply and will not be able to really use in any beneficial way the teachings that they have learned. Often they can become egotistical or attached to their learning or that sort of thing, and of course that's not beneficial or helpful at all as well. But for those who do practice, the study of the Buddha's teaching in tandem or accompanying your practice is of great value, because as I said, it is something that you can carry with you and apply later and throughout your life. So it behooves us to always be learning and studying along with our practice. The sixth noble wealth is called jaga. And jaga is really the heart of the Buddhist concept of wealth as an idea. Jaga means generosity or charity or sacrifice. It's the opposite of accumulation. It shows how diametrically opposed the Buddha's teaching is to worldly pursuits. We consider wealth to be giving things away. You're truly wealth when you have the attitude or the quality of mind to give away possessions, to share with others, to be generous and kind and charitable and to sacrifice. And this is for various reasons. Obviously, you can understand that when you're kind and generous, sharing the material possessions, sharing the Buddha's teaching with others, you become surrounded by people who are grateful and who appreciate you, people who have a good, a kind perception of you, who have a good feeling about a good relationship with you, people who like you, who are kind, who have a positive attitude towards you. So you have this benefit of this great protection, you could say, as opposed to people who are wealthy but stingy or mean or abusive to those around them. who are then surrounded by people who are abusive, who are mean, who are unfriendly. You know, a person who is kind and generous, even if they don't have great riches to make other people think highly of them, people will think highly of how generous and kind and self-sacrificing they are. Furthermore, of course, a person who is kind and generous will think good of themselves. This feeds into our confidence as an individual, and it feeds into our own happiness and peace. A person who is kind towards others can feel confident in themselves, in their attitude, in their behavior, for being such a kind and generous person. The Buddha said, our goodness, even when we're alone, when there's no one around to appreciate our good deeds, it envelops us like a warm blanket. It envelops us, and it's always with us. Even though people may not be with us, our deeds are always with us. And when our deeds are good, they are something we can dwell in as a home, as a residence for us that will never abandon us. We'll always have to fall back on is our goodness and our kindness, that we the goodness that we have done for others. But more importantly, the practice of sacrifice, charity, giving, all of these things being diametrically opposed to accumulating is also diametrically opposed to craving and addiction. A person who is constantly engaged in charity and in giving up is always training in the letting go of craving and clinging. Anytime craving arises, when the response is to give up the thing that you crave, to find a way to give it away and to act in opposition to your addiction, is an important part of the training to become free from that addiction. And it changes your attitude as you become more confident and more comfortable in being kind and generous and sacrificing and all these things. You more and more free yourself from addiction. So you become truly wealthy in the Buddhist sense by being free from the need for anything, being free from wanting. You're never wanting for anything because you've given up wanting, because your attitude is not for the accumulation of material possessions. It's for the accumulation of goodness, which comes more and more as you practice good deeds. So a true wealth, according to the Buddha's teaching, is to be generous and to be giving whenever you can, in whatever way you can, being helpful and kind and compassionate towards others. The seventh noble wealth, and really the pinnacle of all wealth, the crown jewel, of course, is wisdom, paññā. Paññā as opposed to bahusaccha, where you learn many things. Paññā here means wisdom, knowledge that comes from seeing things for yourself, from experience, from understanding the truth of reality, understanding the true nature of suffering and the cause of suffering and the cessation of suffering and the path leading to the cessation of suffering. Wisdom is absolutely the most valuable possession one can ever have, and it's something that no amount of money could ever buy you. It's something that we see is often lacking in those who have the most money, and perhaps not lacking more than other people, but something that they could never hope to have more of than other people just because of their money. Money will never make them more wise than other people, unless in some way it helps them see the uselessness of wealth itself, in which case they would most likely just give it all up and find a better way to live. Wisdom is what allows us to see the difference between good and evil, that which is beneficial, that which is harmful. No matter how much wisdom we think we have, as long as we are engaged in things that cause us suffering and avoiding those things that bring us happiness, we can never be said to be truly wise. A person who is wise never engages in things that bring them suffering, because as everyone wants to be free from suffering, only a wise person is able to find it, because they are able to see the difference and abandon those deeds of body, speech, and mind that lead to suffering. Likewise, though we all wish to be happy, most of us are engaged in behaviors that will never lead to happiness, seeking happiness in ways that can never truly satisfy or bring happiness. Only a wise person knows the difference and is able to undertake those things that truly lead to happiness. The practice of mindfulness, the practice of seeing clearly, that allows us to let go of our addiction rather than always getting what we want, accumulating more and more material wealth. We give up wanting, and then we're never without anything that we want because we have no wanting for anything. Wisdom is the goal of the Buddha's teaching. It's the highest sort of wealth, and it's diametrically opposed to the material pursuit of pleasure, which is only based on delusion and the idea that it could somehow satisfy us to always get what we want. Wisdom is to go in the other direction, to free ourselves from the need for material possessions, the need for wealth, and the need for sensual pleasure or pleasure at all whatsoever. Finding happiness in our way of looking at things, so that no matter what we experience, we're happy. We don't need this experience to be happy or that experience to be happy. We don't need to be free from this sort of experience or that sort of experience. We don't need to be protected from any experience. Our happiness isn't dependent on any sort of experience. We're free from any sort of being triggered or upset or distressed by the changes of the world, which are inevitable and unavoidable. So we have two ways we can go: to chase after material wealth and never be satisfied and always chasing after the next fix, the next high, and constantly increasing our craving and our clinging. Or we can go in the other direction, strive to give up craving and clinging, to see through the attachment, to see that the things that we're craving for are not worth craving for, they're impermanent, unsatisfying, uncontrollable, and to give up craving and thereby be free from suffering, be free from any kind of need or any kind of desire for things to be other than what they are, having contentment for things as they are, no matter how they are, never being needy for things to be other than what they are. So, an overview of true wealth according to the Buddha's teaching. These are the sevenfold wealth that we can certainly expect to gain more and more the more we practice something that is a core aspect of our practice of the Buddha's teaching, and a reason for us to all dedicate ourselves to the continued practice of the Buddha's teaching of the path that leads to freedom from suffering. So that's the Dhamma for today. Thank you all for listening.